Before we move on to the second of the 7 points in this mind training system, a little more about the first one. Resolve to begin, and its slogan, its one slogan, train in the preliminaries. We talked about the four contemplations which are such an important part of this step, considering the rarity and preciousness of our human life, the inevitability of our death, the awesome power of our choices and actions, and the inescapability of suffering. These are important. Why would we bother with compassion if we'd lost track of all this? If we'd forgotten how precious and brief our life is? If we weren't in touch with how powerful our choices are? And if we had somehow managed to wall ourselves completely off from suffering, like we'd be too numb to be compassionate? So these are great contemplations. It would be a great thing, I think, to say these to yourself every morning and see what happens. The other big part of the first point, training in the preliminaries, is meditation, mindfulness and insight meditations. This includes the grounding, simple, spacious, and open meditations we've been working with, and also includes some more analytical meditations that we'll get to. But we start with simple, and we return to simple over and over and over again. Just being, just breathing, coming back. This helps to open the mind to space, the space where compassion can actually arise as a real felt experience, not just like it's something we're supposed to do or something. But maybe if you felt like you were fighting your wandering mind all day or all yesterday or all day this morning, and those animals were, the animals in there were like tugging really hard at their ropes, maybe. So maybe it doesn't always subjectively feel so spacious to do these practices. But actually it is. Things are shifting and moving beneath the covers of your mind. There's only like a little slice of it we can see with our conscious awareness, you know? We just have a little teeny sliver that we think is all of our mind. But stuff is happening. Maybe it's like the doves who were spreading across the USA for a decade before I noticed them. I didn't know about them, didn't even know they existed, and one day there they were. First I thought they were a different kind of dove, and a local person explained it to me. Like, oh my gosh, how'd they get here? So maybe it's like that. Sometime you notice, oh, how about that? I feel calm and spacious in the mind. These doves seem to be more or less here to stay, though, and maybe that won't stay so long in the mind, but you know what I mean. And this morning, Beth introduced us to listening to sounds as a practice, a wonderful practice that's very helpful in touching into the openness of mind. The term preliminaries in the title of this point is a little problematic to my mind. Preliminary sounds like it's smaller and less important than it is. We hear preliminaries and we think, well, let's get through the preliminaries quickly and get to the main agenda. That's what you might say in a meeting. So maybe this first point should be called, first develop the supports for compassion and then come back all the time. So that was the first point. The second of the 7 points in this system is called the main practice, which is bodhicitta. Bodhicitta is a technical term. And again, you'll have notes and stuff, and there's books, but it's B-O-D-H-I-C-I-T-T-A, bodhicitta. C-I is pronounced ch. Now, my teacher, Norman, avoided this technical term, calling this second point, train in empathy and compassion. That's good, too. The main practice with this bodhicitta, we can make Norman's the subtitle, train in empathy and compassion. Bodhicitta is what I was trying to talk about in that newsletter piece. And we don't exactly have a word for this in English. It's a deep yearning for all of us to awaken to our full potential. It's a deep, deep hope that we'll all be released from confusion and limited thinking that boxes us in and separates us, for all of us to transcend our limited views of who and what we are. And sometimes we notice this feeling when we're inspired. We're so inspired sometimes by stories or our own experience when people kind of go beyond our usual human way of being. This happens a lot in disasters, don't you think? People just somehow go beyond what you would expect of a human being. And the strange thing about it is usually they're not like tired or exhausted or whipped down like this. They feel good, you know, when they go beyond. So that's bodhicitta, this wish for all of us to go beyond. Or another way to think about it is, since going beyond is like going beyond a limited view, to fully become human. So I've been monitoring the news a little bit for us all. Hopefully you've been freeing yourself from that, but I've been taking a look from time to time. And the story starting to come out of Houston, Texas is quite astounding. Well, here we have dry grass and sun and incredibly calm conditions. There, they're still experiencing unbelievable amounts of rain coming out of the sky from Hurricane Harvey. It's now Tropical Storm Harvey. Because it's kind of just like hanging around. It sort of stopped and it moved back into the Gulf and it came back and it's kind of more towards Louisiana. It's hanging around. In the last few days, they have received 30 inches of rain, and 15 more at least are expected. That is some hard rain. I can't imagine. It would probably just be painful to be out in that kind of rain. So far, the response to all this sounds like it's really pretty good, pretty organized. Lots of people are helping. But the magnitude of the problem is just so immense. A whole large American city flooded. I forget how many people there are in Houston, but it's the fourth largest city or something like that. They set up a big shelter at their convention center for people who are flooded out of their homes. They were ready for 5,000 people, and now there are 8,000 people and counting at the convention center shelter. I get pretty daunted by trying to feed and house 50 people at Camp Samish. I was trying to imagine 8,000 and more coming. My friend Galen, who's the teacher of the Houston Zen Center, wrote to us that they are high and dry and everybody's fine, and they were ready to help and they want to open the Zen Center as a shelter to anyone who needs it, but nobody can get to them. You go a few blocks in any direction, you reach a flooded street that you can't drive through. And the whole city, I guess, is a patchwork of flooded and unflooded streets. Amazingly, only a few people so far are confirmed dead. But they think that tens of thousands or more may still be stuck in their homes on these little islands surrounded by flooding. And coming out of this also are some great stories of generosity. The all-volunteer Cajun Navy has mobilized. Somehow I missed the story about the Cajun Navy, which was created during Hurricane Katrina, but the name says it all. Ordinary people who have boats, you know, who live in Cajun country. I don't know if they all identify as Cajun or eat crawfish or whatever, but the Cajun Navy. And the Cajun Navy, these ordinary people who have jobs and stuff to do and are probably busy, you know, hundreds of them dropped what they were doing in Louisiana, stuck their boats in their pickup trucks, and hightailed it to Houston to try to help. And I doubt that FEMA is providing them with, you know, any resources or anything like that. They're just trying to help. But it's getting increasingly hard to help, they said. Here's a little bit from CNN. As water levels keep rising, so has the desperation of those stranded. People are starting to panic, rushing the rescue boats if they don't stop. Clyde Kane of the Cajun Navy So happy-making to see that in the national media. The Cajun Navy, capital C, capital N. Caucasian Navy. A Louisiana-based rescue force that gained fame during Hurricane Katrina said in one instance a boat broke down and the whole crew sought shelter in a delivery truck. And meanwhile, other people tried to steal the inoperable boat. They're making it a bit difficult to rescue them, he said. People are rushing around. Everyone wants to get out at the same time. They're panicking, the water is rising, but we are not going to give up. Jim McInville, who owns a furniture store in Houston and in nearby Redmond, also pitched in. Think about this, a furniture store. What do they have in a furniture store? He opened his doors to evacuees on Saturday night and gave 600 people a place to sleep. We have tons of mattresses in our warehouse, he said, and we found some blankets. We also have a restaurant inside the store, so we're feeding them for free. Can you imagine that? So fully human. Great generosity and also great fear, panic. How do we practice compassion and generosity in a world like this? A world with sunny, dry days and torrential floods going on. So train in bodhicitta, that's how, according to these teachings. Train in bodhicitta, that's how we do it. Bodhicitta is a compound word. Bodhi is often translated as awakening, which along with enlightenment is a very confusing and confounding term from Buddhism, misunderstood. Maybe a better translation of Bodhi is deeply feeling and remembering our great potential as human beings. Really feeling that. Feeling our potential. Bodhi. Waking up to that potential. And citta literally means thought. A thought. So the thought of awakening. The thought of feeling our deep potential as human beings. But thought is a little too flat in this context. Maybe vision or realization is better. Because bodhicitta is something you feel, not something you think about exactly. Something that arises deeply in the heart and the mind and beyond. A wholesome urge that you not only want all beings to feel safe and be happy and engaged, but you want all beings to deeply realize that there's safety and happiness just baked into our experience. No matter what's going on, there's safety and happiness and fulfillment. Bodhicitta is a relative of the term loving kindness, which you've probably heard of, but with this more transcendent flavor. Loving kindness is the wish that all beings be happy and safe, and bodhicitta adds, and maybe they also remember their true nature. Maybe they also realize that they are vast and amazing human beings. So this kind of Buddhism is very enthusiastic in pointing to a deeper and more subtle understanding than we usually live in. And it gets confusing from our conventional viewpoint. In some ways, these aspects, these teachings, literally don't make sense in that rational, stepwise, A leads to B kind of way. And yet, every culture in history has some sense, don't you think, of a bigger experience than that kind of rationality. That our life is beyond our limited ideas of our life. And naturally, this is hard to talk about, and any language we use is easily shot down and brings up resistance or is in like the wrong category of language. In my view, this stuff is the great offering of the world's religions. But the world's religions also have led to so much trouble. So it's a little confounding. And paradoxically, one of the things that I think we also appreciate in our mindfulness and compassion training programs is there's a kind of a freedom from religious language. We use a kind of a universal language, I tend to call it. Some of my colleagues say secular, but I've realized over the years that that's actually like a bad word in many Christian vocabulary, so I don't say secular, because that would exclude people. So religion, on the one hand, seems to be a vehicle for describing something so essential and important for the human heart, and yet the very form and language of a religion blocks people. But luckily, we have some buy-in to talk about one religion, Buddhism. It was on the title and all the descriptions, and you signed up, so we can carry on. And probably most of us don't have too much, like, you know, childhood trauma about terms like bodhicitta and lojong, you know. So it's okay. But maybe it'll allow us in some way to access some of the religions that we are familiar with with a new perspective, because there's a lot of value there, don't you think? So back to the second point. The main practice, which is bodhicitta, train in empathy and compassion. This point has 9 slogans within it, and so we're going to examine a few of them, and that will make it much more real, I think. So here are a few slogans we can breathe with and study. And they're a set that has to do with this transcendent vision of sharing our life together. Sharing our life in a bigger way than some small idea of who and what we are. The first slogan I want to focus on is rest in the openness of mind. Rest in the openness of mind. So we've already talked about this one. It's what we're developing in our mindfulness meditation practice. We can see how easily we're destabilized by our reactivity and the closedness of our mind. And we practice meditation and contemplations and work with our attitude so that we can stay more connected to the openness of the mind. So here's what you might work on today. When you return to the awareness of breath and body today, see if you can hold it a little more lightly, a little more gently, a little more spaciously. Feeling the body breathing quietly and feeling the space around the body and around the breathing and around the mind. But that gentle touching into the body breathing is so helpful, keeps us grounded like an anchor. But we don't need to cling tight to the anchor. Just a light touch, returning to it, opening up, feeling the space. First slogan, rest in the openness of mind. And the listening practice that we just learned is also helpful. Rest in the openness of this contact with the soundscape all around us. Sounds coming and going. We don't even need to know what they are, or where they came from. Hope I didn't burden you with now trying to figure out what all the bird songs are. A resting in the soundscape is a resting in the openness of mind. And the trick there is to notice our subtle, or not so subtle, clinging and aversion, desire and aversion that arises as we encounter sound objects or any other cognitive object. And see if we can let that go. Just sounds, you know. Train sound is not better than a bird sound, is not better than a garbage truck. And it's nice to practice awareness of sound here because most of them tend to be in our preferred sound category, which makes it a little bit easier on us. We like these kind of sounds. And for a long time, I was sort of afraid to practice, to bring up listening practice when I would do retreats and classes in like conference rooms. I've done entire all-day retreats in corporate conference rooms. And it works out great, actually. You have to have faith in the practice. So those HVAC systems are full of interesting and subtle changes in sound. Like, it gets really fascinating, actually. First I thought, that's bad sound. Nobody's going to like this practice. So rest in the openness of mind. Second slogan, connected, very closely connected, is examine the nature of awareness. Examine the nature of awareness. Pay attention to the process by which we perceive things and how we're aware of things, and how easily it all gets distorted. How we tend to hyper-focus on one thing and miss everything else. Especially things we don't like, right? Grab our attention. But how we don't even notice half the time that there's a whole process happening here. A process of awareness that's running, that kind of like provides our thinking mind with sort of a view at the end of the process, like something gets spit out of like a Dr. Seuss machine. Chunk, 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 beep! And we think that's what's happening. But a whole process just happened. A process of perception and categorization and evaluation and connecting and all kinds of stuff. Opinions and preferences are in the process. So this is great about retreat. We can slow things down a little bit and notice more about how this process of awareness unfolds. One of my colleagues says there are only six things that ever happen. Only six things that ever happen. The rest we make up. So here are the six things that ever happen. One, you're going to guess pretty quickly. One, we see something. Two, we hear something. Right? We smell something. And we taste something. We touch something. And then the Buddhists put in, we think something as a sixth sense. But the nice thing is they say it's not really that different from any of the other senses. We kind of get all identified with it and we think we're right, but it's just a mind thinking a thought, not really any different than the eyes seeing a vision. So just six things are happening. But we take these six events and we glom them together into this sort of machine, and out comes who I am and who you are and what's going on and what should be going on and what shouldn't be going on and all that. A little bit like a movie on film. I was just realizing that this metaphor is going to become like unusable not too many years from now. It just means no more film. But you know, in a film, in a projector, at the movie house, 32 frames per second, separate little frames, but it looks like a seamless whole. It's immersive. It feels like just me doing my life, but actually it's these little moments of perception that are woven together. Can we slow it down a bit and see some of these frames? And can we get curious not just about the movie, but about the guy sitting in the seat? Or gal sitting in the seat? Is there really a me in the middle of this movie watching my life? Or is that also just a part of the movie? What if you go to the movies and you're actually in the movie? If that's how it's actually working. So the retreat environment is such a great place to study, examine the nature of awareness. Paying attention and being curious and noticing how we perceive and assemble and assume. And my favorite way of doing this is, and I'd be surprised if this doesn't happen yet, just wait. Even though we're not really talking or interacting too much, we can come up with some fabulous stories about each other. Have you noticed this? Based on almost no information, we know she's that kind of a person and he's that kind of person. You can fall deeply in love with somebody in this setting and then fall deeply out of love with them just as quickly because of the funny way they scoop their beans at the whatever, you know. Can be anything. Can be anything. The nature of awareness is very funny, but also very serious, because this is how wars start, too, literal wars. A misunderstanding of the nature of awareness. So sometimes you can slow things down and just kind of notice, oh, I just perceived something and I came to a conclusion. You can actually see this unfolding, but more often, in my experience, you notice the sort of result of all this and how silly and wrong it is, and you can kind of back up the clock a little bit and say, well, how did I get to that? Jeez, that's nuts. So we had rest in the openness of mind, and then we had examine the nature of awareness. Let's do one more. This one's philosophically challenging. This slogan is, see everything as a dream. See everything as a dream. Stop taking everything so rigidly and seriously. See its fuzzy edges. See its fundamental impermanence in the way you can't really tell where one thing ends and the next thing begins. Relax and don't get so worked up because everything is a dream. A dream of the mind. This slogan and the experience it's referencing really help us to lighten up a bit. Stop being so heavy and tight. And it's not just an idea, it's a felt experience you can have, and you have had, I'm certain. Maybe you didn't call it by this language. It's all a dream. We can see that to some extent all the time, but we don't always notice. Sometimes people have a very immersive and direct experience of see everything as a dream. Sometimes in the context of meditation practice or like a powerful experience of some kind or a powerful aesthetic event or something or a crisis. Sometimes everything drops away. You can really see everything as a dream. Those kind of experiences can be very exciting and also they can be quite destabilizing. There's a lot of romanticism in the meditation world about having dramatic meditation experiences. They can be helpful, but they really aren't actually not necessary. And anyway, they're just experiences like anything else. So on the whole, I think it's better not to be too dramatic about see everything as a dream. Gradually, you practice holding things more lightly. Seeing things with softer eyes. A line I love from the Mindful Self-Compassion class is, the practice of compassion is practicing with damp eyes. Isn't that sweet? Practicing with damp eyes. Because it's all a little sad, isn't it? And a little wonderful. And it's all a dream. But if we misunderstand this slogan, it could make us really lazy and undermine our can-do spirit of compassion. That's the challenge of it. We can see that everything's a dream, but it's a dream we deeply care about. We hold it lightly, but we also love it, and we show up with our whole being, our whole dream-like being. And because it's a dream, we aren't too upset when our well-meaning actions don't quite work out the way we'd hoped. Oh well, we can say, I'll try something else. See everything as a dream doesn't undermine our engagement, but it does help us engage without such heavy expectations, without being so bossy. Because who knows the logic of dreams anyway? It's not a surprise at all when something has an unexpected consequence, whether it's a good consequence or bad. We're surprised and curious in dreams and about dreams. And this slogan helps us to live that way a little more. Huh, we say, you know, didn't think of that. Thank you. We're open, we're curious, and we're grateful. I thought I'd share a couple paragraphs of what Norman Fisher wrote about this slogan, see everything as a dream. It was kind of a nice take on it, I think. Hopefully it's enough different from mine to be worth listening. The important thing about this slogan, the effect it's trying to coax us into is relief. The same relief that comes when you wake up from that nightmare and your whole body suddenly relaxes because you realize that the dire situation you seemed to be in a moment ago is actually okay. It was just a dream. Your anxiety disappears and you immediately lighten up and relax. Even the worst things can exude some lightness. Yes, this is terrible. This is not what I wanted, not what I hoped for, not what I worked for, maybe even what I feared, but it's also not that bad. It's like a dream. It's happening and not happening. Soon it will be in the past. Soon I can look at it differently. I don't need to validate all those dire thoughts that will only make matters worse. Maybe I don't need to get so worked up about it. Maybe I can just figure out how to deal with it without that extra measure of anxiety and freak out. This is not a gimmick, he says. Everything really is like a dream. When you train in this slogan, meditate with it and repeat it to yourself and apply it to your daily experience, it begins to change things for you. When you find that you're angry or upset, and when you're having a day when you're mad at yourself or someone else, and you're hammering on yourself or complaining about everyone else for some reason, you can sometimes remember to see everything as a dream. And your mind will snap into a more alert presence. And you'll find that you can lighten up, and to some extent. Everything is passing. Every problem, no matter how tough, is passing, and it's already solved. Even as it's developing, it's already solved. See everything as a dream. So, we can just play with that. And it would be surprising if you didn't feel a little, about that one. You should, but you can also practice with it. Just try bringing that phrase into your mind from time to time. See everything as a dream. We'll see what happens. The Buddha was also big on see for yourself, you know. Not that he didn't spend 40 years teaching full time and telling people a lot of stuff and giving a lot of advice, but he also said very emphatically, see for yourself. He has a very famous text where he gives that advice, you should see for yourself, that sometimes is only partially quoted. People quote that part, but the other part he says in there is, and listen to the wise. So listen to the wise and see for yourself. So both. So just to review a little bit, and then I'll stop. The first point was, get started. Resolve to begin. And its only slogan was train in the preliminaries. We looked at those four contemplations about our temporary, precious, powerful, and suffering included life. And we looked at the importance of just sitting, just being. Train in the preliminaries. Second point was the main practice, which is training in bodhicitta. Subtitle, train in empathy and compassion. And we discussed that to do this, we need to hold things lightly, but with a serious intention. We looked at there's actually 9 slogans, but we just had time for 3. Rest in the openness of mind, examine the nature of awareness, and see everything as a dream. And we'll actually look at a 4th slogan tonight because it has an attached meditation. So we'll learn the slogan and do the meditation tonight. You need to remember all this? Well, you know what I'm going to say. Not really. We can trust our heart and our gut and our trajectory in retreat. Just doing your best to show up, to pay attention, to hold it lightly, to stay curious, take care of yourself as best you can. We're each of us having just the retreat we need to have. It's all just right, including the challenges. And anyway, this is all a dream. We'll have a bit of a chuckle when we wake up at home. What a funny dream that was. So, thank you very much for listening.